Of broken concrete, the shepherd is turned away in despair. The artist who created this nativity is Tariq Salsa. He says he wanted to show the Holy Family as Palestinian refugees, oppressed, rejected, displaced. He says pain is there as long as the occupation is there. If the occupation withdraws, then the pain is over.
And Jason, outside of Bethlehem, can you fill us in on the latest developments in Israel's war against Hamas?
Well, the United Nations says more than 80% of Gaza's population is now displaced. Over the weekend, health officials in Gaza say at least 70 people were killed on Sunday alone. And the Israeli military says it sustained some of its heaviest losses since the war began. Also, the humanitarian crisis continues to worsen. Food is scarce. The UN says starvation is happening in Gaza. And clean water is a huge problem. The average person uses about 17 liters of water a day. Right now, the World Food Program says each person in Gaza is getting less than 2.
That is NPR's Jason DeRose in Bethlehem. Jason, thank you so much for your reporting.
You're welcome.
Teens, or even tweens, with holiday gift money are likely to spend at least some of it on skincare products. Marketing experts say cosmetic and skincare companies are doubling down on social media targeting younger teens. And as Alabama Public Radio's Corey Young reports, kids are buying in big time.
Skincare routine for a beginner at the age of 12.
We're going to take a trip to my bathroom.
The one for like 12.
11-year-old Natalia Pruitt sits at the family dining table with her 16-year-old sister, Kaylin. They scroll through YouTube, TikTok, and Instagram skinfluencer videos on their phones.
This toner water, look how empty it is. I love it.
Natalia has a baby face with flawless skin. Some of her favorite videos feature cleansers, moisturizers, and serums. They have bright, colorful packaging and brand names. Most are out of her budget.
Some products are like $90. Some are like a lot of money. And some are like just like $30, maybe $20.
Not all the promoted products are expensive. Some are available at the drugstore. Her sister Kaylin knows the videos are advertising. Still, the acne and wrinkle products catch her attention.
So if it does work, I will spend money on it. Because it's, I mean, I want to look super pretty, so why not?
We went from cowgirl boots to bum bum care cream, and I'm like, what is that even for?
That's Rosanna Pruitt, Natalia and Kaylin's mom. She's puzzled by the skincare product obsession, but marketing experts aren't. The Pew Research Center recently found nearly 1 in 3 U.S. teens say they're on YouTube or TikTok several times a day. Almost 1 in 5 say they're on it constantly. And that's good for business, says Dinesh Shah, a marketing professor at Georgia State University.
Teenagers is traditionally an extremely hard segment to reach out to through traditional forms of media. And so this is working like a charm.
Shah says the nature of social media consumption, combined with many teens' preoccupation with appearance, makes kids prime targets.
There's not a single cosmetic company you can think of today, right, that does not have a strong presence on social media, because it's just so powerful and effective.
But when it comes to beauty, this kind of advertising directed at her kids is a slippery slope, says Rosanna Pruitt.
It worries me that it's going to give them a little bit of a complex about aging, because they're not supposed to be worried about that right now.
There's concern some popular products might be too harsh for young skin, says dermatologist Ann Chappis, who practices in New York City. As the mother of a sixth grade girl, she's well aware of the teen skincare marketing trend.
Young, teenage, preteen skin doesn't need anti-aging products except for sunscreen. Sunscreen is our number one anti-aging product that everyone should use.
That advice, Chappis says, along with a reminder that beauty also comes from within, should leave both teen skin and wallets glowing. For NPR News, I'm Corey Young in Fairhope, Alabama.
For many families, visiting Santa at the mall is a holiday tradition. But Jose Delaglio with the nonprofit Autism Speaks says for some kids, the experience can be overwhelming.
Many people with autism rely on knowing what to expect and feel. So crowds, noises, and busy lines, all things that go along with a mall really create a discomfort for them.
Paulina Ganung has autism. So does her 5-year-old son, Liam. She says being out in public can sometimes be difficult for Liam.
He is very aware of other people judging him, and that causes further dysregulation on his part.
So they went to one of the hundreds of sensory-friendly Santa events that were held across the country. No crowds, no lines. Even so, Liam at first, she says, was scared.
So we gave him a blanket, and he actually made himself a little cave and hid in there while he regulated that it was a judgment-free zone where he could have a screen and no one's giving the eye looks or comments.
And Santa didn't rush him.
Within a few minutes, he was able to regulate, and Santa actually walked over and sat on the floor with him and tried to engage with him, not giving that direct pressure of trying to get his attention, but just showing that mutual interest in what he was interested in. That was really special for me to see, because not everywhere you go has that sort of inclusion and understanding.
A little understanding and a big Christmas gift. Every year in hundreds of cities around the country, musicians have been coming together for Tuba Christmas. NPR's Netta Ulubi tells us all about that bass.
This is the tradition's 50th year. On the very first Tuba Christmas, 300 musicians showed up at the ice skating rink at New York's Rockefeller Plaza. Since then, Tuba Christmas concerts have popped up in practically every state. Anchorage, Alaska this year, Tombstone, Arizona, the Big Island in Hawaii, here's one at the Kennedy Center in Washington, D.C. A few years ago, overachievers in Kansas City set a Tuba Christmas world record.
We played Silent Night for 5 straight minutes with 835 tubas.
Stephanie Brimhall works with the Kansas City Symphony. I asked her what one word might best describe the experience of hearing hundreds of caroling tubas.
Rumbling would be one.
Enveloping.
That's Mike Galimo. He directs the band program at Iowa State University.
It's this warm, low organ kind of quality where you can feel food in your lower intestinal tract move because of the vibrations.
Galimo says that's a good thing. So is the chance for all kinds of members of the tuba family to take the spotlight for a change. Usually those big, fat-toned brass instruments never get to play the melody.
This year we had a helicon, which is like a Civil War version of a tuba. And somebody had an Alpha Clyde one year. Usually there's a few people that have a double bell euphonium.
Less exotic are those white fiberglass sousaphones they play in marching bands.
We call those Tupperware tubas.
That's tuba humor. You'll hear a lot of it.
We call it the heavy metal concert of the year.
My first Tuba Christmas was when I was in middle school.
Charles Ortega has been playing at Tuba Christmases since the 1980s. This year, he organized one in Pueblo, Colorado. Ortega learned tuba from his father, who used to perform in a polka band in Texas.
He loved playing the tuba. Even the year that he passed, he was still playing.
Some of Ortega's very best Tuba Christmas memories, he says, were the ones where he played with his dad and his teenage son, who also plays the tuba.
That was amazing. I had one on one side, one on the other, and we were all just beaming. It was great.
It's not uncommon now for multiple generations to play in tuba Christmas concerts. That's what happens when a tradition endures and gets bigger, broader, and brassier. Netta Ulubi, NPR News.
This is NPR News.
This is Wisconsin Public Radio. I'm Peter Bryant in for Alex Crow. Good to have you with us this Christmas morning on WPR. Just ahead, A. Martinez looks at some of the best kitchen tools with Lisa McManus and Hannah Crowley. They review gadgets for America's Test Kitchen, and they have a new book. It's called Kitchen Gear, The Ultimate Owner's Manual.
Warm up your winter with seasonal programs from WPR. Hi, I'm Sarah Ashworth, director of WPR. From NPR's Hanukkah lights to the Eau Claire Master Singers to Santa taking calls from kids on The Larry Mueller Show, we've got holiday specials to keep you company at home, at work, or on the go. Listen online or on air and find the complete schedule at wpr.org/holidays.
And those specials include 3 hours of holiday music favorites from our great collection here at WPR. Stephanie Elkins brings you that starting at 9 this morning.
Support for WPR comes from Bagels Forever, available fresh daily at the store in Madison and the frozen food case in grocery stores throughout the state. Bagels and bagel chips can be shipped anywhere in the U.S. at bagelsforever.com.
Support comes from UW Parkside's Adventures in Lifelong Learning, offering seniors a variety of activities to stay engaged and healthy, including hiking, lectures, bridge, current affairs, discussion groups, and book clubs that meet via Zoom. To learn more, visit uwp.edu/ALL.
Mild conditions forecast today around Wisconsin with high temperatures in the 40s and 50s, some morning fog, otherwise scattered showers today. It could get windy too by the afternoon.
Support for NPR comes from the station and from the Annie E. Casey Foundation, using research and evidence to develop solutions that help families and communities create a brighter future for young people. More information is available at aecf.org. From the Langloth Foundation, supporting justice, equity, and opportunity for all people to foster and sustain safe and healthy communities. Learn more at langloth.org. From Carnegie Corporation of New York, supporting innovations in education, democratic engagement, and the advancement of international peace and security. More information is available online at carnegie.org. And from the John D. and Catherine T. MacArthur Foundation at macfound.org.
This is Morning Edition from NPR News. I'm Asma Khalid.
And I'm A. Martinez. Whether you're banging nails into a 2x4 or whipping up the perfect souffle, there's no substitute for having the right tool for the job. And one way to keep the chef in your home happy is to make sure their kitchen is stocked with the right kitchen gear. But there are so many slicers, dicers, cookers, and fryers. How do you know what works and what might leave a bad taste in your mouth? Lisa McManus and Hannah Crowley review gadgets and tools for America's test kitchen. They've written a new book titled Kitchen Gear, The Ultimate Owner's Manual. It's chock full of reviews and tips. And they sent me a few essential kitchen tools to try out while keeping an eye on me over Zoom.
Can you see my hands?
Yeah, the very fingertips are cut off, but we can see most of your hands. Yeah.
Is that a precursor to what's actually going to happen? The very fingertips get
cut off? Oh, gosh, that's not a good idea. I shouldn't say that.
Yeah, my wife is the cook of the house. I have trouble remembering which side of the frying pan is up. So we focused on the basic tools every chef needs. Here's Lisa McManus.
I would say everybody should have a really good, comfortable, sharp knife, a chef's knife.
Hannah Crowley says every chef also needs a good cutting board.
The best choices are plastic and wood. You should never, ever, ever use a glass cutting board. They will instantly dull your knife.
People have them. They're decorative, but never use them as a cutting board.
All right, noted. Let's start with a knife. Hannah and Lisa sent their favorite.
It's an 8-inch chef's knife by Victorinox. It's a very narrow, thin, sharp, precise knife. This knife is only about $40. Hannah took that knife over to MIT, and they looked under a very powerful microscope at it and a knife that cost $300, and it was comparable.
That's actually what they use in the Purdue packing houses to break down the chickens, that exact knife. So can you imagine the number of chickens Purdue goes through? That thing stands up.
All right, let's try it out. Now, got to understand something here. Handing me a paintbrush doesn't make me Picasso, and giving me a great knife does not make me a chef, which is why the next part of our story is titled, How Many People Does It Take to Cut Up an Onion?
You're going to cut that in half?
Cut it the long way through the root, so you're cutting the root in half.
Okay, I cut something already. I don't know what I cut. Let's see. I cut this
part. No, the other end.
So now... Now cut this part off here?
Yep. With the sharp part actually going in towards the onion, towards your hand.
Oh, I see. Okay.
Yeah. And just wiggle it back, forward and back.
Oh, like this? No.
Yeah. And maybe even pinch and hold it up a little higher to get a little more control.
Oh, okay.
There.
Well, yeah, it's.
Yeah, no, it looks great.
Okay, that's really good. Yeah. That looks good.
Are you crying?
I'm crying in joy that I actually did this. But the onion has not made me cry yet.
That's good. That's a sign of a sharp knife. You know, if you're crying a lot with your onions, maybe you need to sharpen your knife.
The sharp part away from my fingers. Okay, good. Check. Now, onion was cut, fingers intact. It's time to cook it using the next essential kitchen tool that Hannah and Lisa sent me.
A 12-inch cast iron skillet from Lodge. You know, we've talked about what one skillet would you take to a desert island, et cetera, or if you could only buy one pan to get started with. People think of this as a frying pan, and it is that, but it's also, it can be used as a roasting pan. You can bake a cookie or a cake or a pie or cornbread in it.
Now, the packaging says seasoned cast iron skillet. What does that mean? Does it have salt and pepper all worked into the skillet?
Cast iron, if it's exposed to moisture and air, will start to rust. So basically, it's coated with oil and it's heated, and that forms a natural nonstick and protective coating on the cast iron.
Now, Lisa and Hannah, once my wife was not at home, and I decided to be considerate and do the dishes. And I grabbed her cast iron skillet, and I could already see people are just...
No, we know where this is going.
So I thought, well, I'll just clean it for her. So I took some Comet in there, some water, and got like a scrub brush and started really scrubbing the cast iron skillet, really trying to clean it, because I thought the cleaner it gets, the happier she'll be. And the look of mortification on her face, which is a look that I'm very, very familiar with over 25 years of marriage. But tell me, why was that a mistake?
The seasoning you're building up on that, it's a natural substance and you can scrub it right back off again. Luckily, you can repair that relationship with the pan and your wife. But yeah, you shouldn't scrub it with anything that violent. It's never necessary, really.
Please forgive me. I know not what I do. Please forgive me. I can't stop loving you.
All right, time now to cook up my less than perfectly cut up onion. I poured a little olive oil into that seasoned skillet and tossed it in.
Nothing better than the smell of onions and garlic starting to cook in a kitchen.
If someone sees something on TV or sees something in the store that catches their eye, but maybe they don't know if they need it or will use it, what's the one question that they need to have in mind before they invest in some kind of kitchen gadget or kitchen gear?
I hate to say a lot of stuff that is seen on TV or on Instagram. Often they're just made to be eye-catching and they're not actually simple, functional, durable. You know, you don't want something with a billion parts. You're going to lose them. You have to clean them. You have to dry them. It's great if it looks good, but we want it to work.
Yeah. Do I already have this? For example, if you have a convection oven, you basically have an air fryer, you know? And so I've talked several relatives and friends out of getting air fryers. And then I would say the second question, will I use this? Because I don't really bake. I have every single baking pan you could need because I thought that's what one should buy for a kitchen. So do you bake cake at home? No, maybe leave that or gift it to your friend who you know loves to bake.
Lisa McManus and Hannah Crowley are with America's Test Kitchen. They wrote Kitchen Gear, the Ultimate Owner's Manual. Thank you for taking me safely through all this. I got all my fingers. Thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you for having us.
Thank you.
Please forgive me. Can't stop loving you. Don't deny me this pain I'm going through. Please forgive me. I can't stop loving you.
This is NPR News.
Winter has begun, and with flurries of white, fluffy snow on the horizon, we asked, how big can a snowflake get? The largest on record? 15 inches. But was it a snowflake?
When people hear the, you know, world's biggest snowflake, they always imagine a snow crystal, which is a different beast entirely.
I'm Elsa Chang. More on All Things Considered from NPR News.
You can hear that, plus the day's news, of course, All Things Considered, including Wisconsin news, with Brady Carlson from 4 until 6:30 today.
You're listening to WGTD HD, Kenosha, Racine, Elkhorn, and Lake Geneva, your gateway to public radio.
A day of holiday specials, music specials coming up starting at 9 this morning. Right now, we'll pause for news headlines from NPR. It's 8:30.
Live from NPR News in Washington, I'm John Stempin. Congress is away for the holidays, but when it returns, it will face budget crises when current spending bills expire on January 19th and February 2nd. NPR's Eric McDaniel says foreign aid could be on the agenda.
It's been a year since Congress approved any military aid to Ukraine. They're currently negotiating in the Senate, even though they're on break on a big combined aid package that includes Israel and the Indo-Pacific as well. And also, kind of strangely, immigration policy reform. Right now, a record number of migrants are crossing the border, often in excess of 10,000 people each day seeking asylum. That negotiation has been all extremely slow going.
NPR's Eric McDaniel. Chinese Christians celebrating Christmas Day have been urged not to forget they live in a socialist country. More from the BBC's Mickey Bristow.
Chinese companies make many of the world's Christmas toys and decorations, but it's not widely celebrated there as a festival. In China, Christmas Day is a working day, but there are millions of Chinese Christians for whom this is an important time. And the Communist Party's chief theorist has reminded them that religious rites have to abide by Chinese law and fit in with the country's traditions. China's leader Xi Jinping wants to make all religions more Chinese, wherever they came from.
This is NPR.
With Wisconsin Public Radio News, I'm Peter Bryant. A nearly century-old movie palace in Milwaukee recently acquired a 1925 pipe organ as part of an ongoing renovation. Evan Casey has more on the historic Wurlitzer at the Oriental Theater.
There were over 2,200 Wurlitzer pipe organs made in the 20th century, but there's around a dozen still in their original operating condition, and one of them is now at the Oriental Theater. The organ began its life at the Paramount Theater in Atlanta. Kristen Heller is with Milwaukee Film, which operates the Oriental Theater.
And so it felt really special that we could take something that was authentic to the time and put it into this place, and it feels like such a fit, and it feels like it blends in with that fiber.
The organ has 15 rows of pipes and plays boat whistles, sirens, and drum sounds. It'll be used for silent movie showings and special events. Evan Casey, Wisconsin Public Radio.
Researchers at the University of Wisconsin-Madison say a study on weight loss and healthy aging in mice may have some good news for humans, too. The study cut the amount of a particular amino acid in the diets of mice by two-thirds, and the mice lost weight even while eating more calories. They also lived longer, were more spry as they aged, and maintained steadier blood sugar levels. Professor Dudley Lamming says he doesn't expect his research to turn into a new fad diet. Humans need the amino acid isoleucine, and it would be difficult to even cut our intake in half. But it may be possible to cut back on the amino acid, which is plentiful in dairy products, soy, and many kinds of meat.
In terms of things that are commonly found in the supermarket, turkey's actually the lowest, so it's very appropriate for this time of year.
Lamming says he hopes the research can lead to new drugs and therapies that could help humans absorb or otherwise dispose of the amino acid. Some morning fog is forecast this Christmas Day, otherwise mild temperatures, highs in the 40s and 50s with scattered showers and some windy conditions. Tomorrow, a few remaining showers, mainly in eastern Wisconsin, a wintry mix in the north by tomorrow night, highs on Tuesday in the 40s. That's the picture through Wednesday, too. By the end of the week, though, colder, more seasonable temperatures with highs in the 20s and 30s. This is WPR.
Support for NPR comes from this station and from the Joyce Foundation, committed to advancing racial equity and economic mobility for the next generation in the Great Lakes region. Learn more at joycefdn.org. From the Wallace Foundation, working to develop and share practices that can improve learning and enrichment for young people and the vitality of the arts for everyone. Ideas and information at wallacefoundation.org. And from listeners like you, who donate to this NPR station.
It's Morning Edition from NPR News. I'm Asma Khalid.
Even as Texas has stiffened penalties for illegal border crossings, lawmakers in Washington seem no closer to a deal on border security. Immigration is likely to be a key issue in the 2024 election, so we wondered how the political conversation around this major issue has shifted over the past year. For one perspective, we reached out to Angela Kelly of the American Immigration Lawyers Association. It's a group that advocates for immigrant rights. Our colleague Michelle Martin started by asking Kelly how she sees that shift.
I think the focus has become much sharper on our southern border and the numbers of folks that are coming to the U.S. for a variety of reasons. We have now four countries in our hemisphere that have very unstable, unworkable governments: Cuba, Haiti, Nicaragua, and Venezuela. But this has also been a year of the untold story about there being legal pathways for people. There's also sponsorship opportunities where Americans have come forward and said, I'd like to sponsor a Ukrainian or an Afghan or a Cuban or a Nicaraguan.
If you think back over the year, is there one or two things that you think have been particularly consequential in kind of shifting the conversation or focusing our attention?
At the beginning of this year, President Biden and Homeland Security Secretary Mayorkas did a press conference. They did a lot of media work laying out what was their vision for a combination of carrots and sticks in terms of policies that would seek to deter people from coming to the U.S. without authorization, and then also open up legal pathways for people so that they're coming with a visa, not with a smuggler, which is, of course, a far better approach to immigration in the U.S. You also saw in May where an order from the Trump administration that was known as Title 42 that was expelling people right at the border without giving them a chance to explain that they may have been fleeing persecution, that order was lifted. And we all expected there to be a rush of people coming to the U.S., and that didn't happen. And so I think that there are some lessons from what we've seen unfold over this year that have worked well and others that we need to do more of, and some that haven't worked so well, that I think could be a playbook, if you will, going forward. We have got a different world in terms of the types and migrants that are on the move, why they're leaving, why they're coming. And we can certainly be a welcoming nation, but we need to have a balance of control and compassion. And I think finding that sweet spot is going to be the challenge for whoever sits in the White House.
What do you think are the politics of this going into 2024? It is clear that kind of a more restrictive attitude toward immigration is something that has been a Republican position, certainly since the Trump administration. I mean, I think in years prior, it was very different. But from the Trump era onward, I think a very restrictive attitude toward immigration seems to be kind of the standard for the Republican Party. And then you see with the Biden administration, it seems like a much more mixed picture. So how would you describe sort of the politics of this going into 2024?
Yeah, I think that's a fair description of it. Trump, from the day he announced that he was going to run for president in 2015, the famous words he said coming down the escalator was that, you know, he described immigrants as rapists and as basically bad people.
Not all immigrants from some places, I think would be fair.
Yes. But the description was not a positive one, shall we say. And that certainly hasn't changed. His rhetoric just of a few days ago has been consistent and has been escalating, talking about immigrants as poisoning the blood of the country. That sends shivers down the spines, I think, of a lot of people, whether you're a Democrat or Republican. And I think that there is a real challenge to find solutions that last and that do balance being a nation that is a nation of laws and a nation of immigrants. We need to find pragmatic progressives, centrist conservatives that can come together and lean and look forward to what would be the right set of policies that ensure that, yes, we are offering humanitarian protection to those who qualify in a way that is fair, in a way that is effective and fast and final. And that is, I think, at the heart of what we're trying to figure out at the southern border. The challenge in doing it today on the backs of the debate that's happening on the Hill around a funding bill for Ukraine or for Israel, that's not the right venue for having such a difficult conversation. But I think it's inevitable because the system is broken and Americans want solutions. And that's a reasonable demand.
That's Angela Kelly. She's senior advisor with the American Immigration Lawyers Association. Angela Kelly, thanks so much for sharing these insights with us.
Thank you very much.
It's the most wonderful time of the year and the busiest for air travel. If you're among the millions of passengers traveling over the holidays, maybe you'll get to enjoy a meal on board.
It's super important to connect the traveler to their families and to support that connection with a flavor that reminds them about memorable times of the past, of their childhood and of their family gatherings.
Jens Kuhlin is the president of Gate Group North America. It's one of the largest airline catering companies in the world. He says some carriers are offering festive menu options throughout the holidays, such as
roasted sliced turkey breast with a rosemary gravy, but then chestnut stuffings, glazed baby carrots, the Brussels sprouts.
And sure, holiday meal planning can be a long process, but have you ever thought about the airline's chef?
To just create a one particular menu, it takes usually from the beginning to until it flies 6 to 8 months.
Farm to plane?
Emirates does prawns and salmon, things like that occur over the holidays.
Chef Dennis Litley is a food blogger who knows what it's like to have a holiday meal at 30,000 plus feet.
On British Air, we had roast turkey or a choice of that and mince pie. Also on Swiss Air, I had quite an incredible meal. A lot of times they'll wow you with desserts. They'll come out with a chocolate mousse or a Yule log. One smaller airline I flew on actually baked cookies in the sky. Just the smell alone was worth the experience.
While in-flight meals can occasionally be as delicious as terrestrial dining, passengers are advised to go light.
The low pressure and a high altitude changes how your body reacts. So you could get bloating, you could have stomach issues.
Chef Dennis recommends steering clear of salty and gassy foods, as well as things that can dehydrate you, like coffee and alcohol. Of course, the kind of meal and whether you actually get one depends on where you're seated.
Business class and first class always gets better quality food or a more, I don't want to say appetizing, but they're getting something that's a little special, where the regular passengers, get the standard fare.
If you're flying coach but have been nice this year, maybe you'll get a Yule log too.
It looks like Christmas, Christmas at the airport. All the planes are grounded.
This is NPR News.
You're tuned to Morning Edition on Wisconsin Public Radio. Good morning. Merry Christmas. I'm Peter Bryant in for Alex Crow today. Later this hour, writer and humorist David Sedaris reads from his holiday story, Santaland Diaries. That's in just under 10 minutes. And we have a number of holiday music specials coming up for you starting at 9 this morning, including Carols with the Eau Claire Master Singers. Laurie Skelton brings us that starting at 1 o'clock. You can see the whole list at wpr.org/holidays.
Wisconsin Public Radio has been a radio pioneer since 1917. That's nearly 100 years of great radio. We're proud of our legacy, and that spirit of innovation continues today. Your year-end support will help carry us into a bright future. Make your year-end gift right now at WPR.org. And thanks.
Support for WPR comes from UW Credit Union, a local financial cooperative dedicated to supporting members' financial well-being online, in branch, and on mobile. UW Credit Union is here for every you.
Support comes from UW Parkside's Adventures in Lifelong Learning, a social and educational network for seniors. A $50 annual fee allows members to choose from a variety of activities year-round that includes lectures, discussion groups, and day trips. To learn more, visit uwp.edu/ALL.
Some of what's happening in the news. Church leaders in Bethlehem canceled Christmas celebrations due to the Israel-Hamas war. A Christmas Day storm will bring blizzard conditions to parts of the plains and Midwest. South Dakota and Nebraska will see the heaviest snowfall. Here in Wisconsin, it'll be rainy and mild today. In other state news, several members of a family in Racine are accused of working for a Mexican drug cartel to traffic guns across the border. They're the subject of a federal indictment. And a study from the University of Wisconsin-Madison finds that mice eating less of a specific amino acid live longer, healthier lives. The findings could one day help humans. You're listening to news from Wisconsin Public Radio.
Support for NPR comes from this station. And from Jarl and Pamela Moan, focusing on civil liberties, foster youth, public radio, and the arts. From the Alfred P. Sloan Foundation, supporting books, radio, podcasts, film, television, theater, and more to bridge science and the humanities. And from Heather Sturt Haga and Paul G. Haga, supporting African Wildlife Foundation, working to ensure wildlife and wild lands thrive in modern Africa. Learn more at awf.org.
This is Morning Edition from NPR News. I'm Asma Khalid. Taylor Swift did not put Kansas City on the map. It's always been known for jazz and its award-winning food scene. More recently, it's been a sports powerhouse after two Super Bowl wins by the Kansas City Chiefs. And now celebrity culture has put the city in the spotlight. Of course, I'm talking about the relationship between pop star Taylor Swift and the Chiefs tight end Travis Kelce. KCUR's Savannah Holly Bates reports Swiftonomics has given the local economy a boost.
2023 was a year of celebration for Kansas City. Besides the Chiefs beating the Philadelphia Eagles in the Super Bowl, in July, Taylor Swift's Eras Tour came to town. She debuted a new music video and her album Speak Now, Taylor's version, at the KC shows. The city went all out for her stop, creating a lineup of Swift-themed events. And then there was the news that some had suspected all along, when Swift showed up at a Chiefs game wearing the team's colors in September.
The rumors apparently are true. Taylor Swift is friends with Travis Kelce.
Swelce, or Trailer, or Tavis, the nicknames people decided to call them, brought renewed worldwide attention to Kansas City. Mayor Quint Lucas says Swift's given Kansas City a new brand, a big reputation, just like the line in one of her songs.
I happened to be in Paris this year for the Rugby World Cup. There was a woman from the Foreign Service in New Zealand who said, "Oh my gosh, you're from Kansas City." I was like, "Yeah." She's like, "Taylor Swift, right? And she's dating some not very famous footballer." I'm like, "Actually, he's kind of a big deal for us."
Visit KC, the city's tourism arm, says the city made about $200 million just from Swift's Eras Tour this summer. After her relationship with Kelce went public, StubHub reported that ticket sales for all Chiefs home games tripled for the rest of the season. Visit KC spokesperson Derek Burns says it's opened a lot of doors for the city to promote itself.
Even if Taylor Swift's name isn't in some of the work we're doing, it is still giving people a reason to think of us a little more seriously.
According to an analysis by Google Trends, searches asking "where is Kansas City" more than doubled in the U.S. over the past 3 months, and search interest in local restaurants skyrockets each time the couple visits one. Even searches for flights based on the pair's travel patterns out of Kansas City are rising. Kansas City business owners say the newfound attention has been a boon for them. Chris Harrington, the owner of West Side Story, sells vintage Kansas City gear. When Swift wore a vintage sweatshirt and a crocheted hat from the store to one of the latest Chiefs games, business soared.
It'll be part of our legacy in some sense, you know, like it's kind of like weird as that sounds that one person just buys a sweatshirt and that's like a moment. But for us being a small shop in Kansas City, that is our moment.
So we've got some, you know, number 87 hair clips.
At Made in KC, a store selling goods from hundreds of local makers, co-owner Keith Bradley has noticed a lot more Swift and Kelce related foot traffic.
It's definitely something that I think the city is really proud of. Whether you're a diehard fan or just getting to know Taylor Swift or never heard of her, you can't escape her her celebrity.
Bradley says the relationship has inspired vendors at his store to create Swift and Kelce-centric merchandise, like a pair of earrings with both of their faces on it or a sweatshirt in Chiefs colors that says, "I'm just here for Taylor." There's no telling whether the Taylor Swift magic will continue to rub off on Kansas City, but it can't hurt when she changes her song lyrics to include her new boyfriend. And that's a relationship residents and businesses here eagerly support, along with the benefits that Taylor Swift's star power brings. For NPR News, I'm Savannah Holly Bates in Kansas City.
Karma is my boyfriend, karma is a guy.
This is NPR News.
10 minutes before 9 o'clock. Just ahead, writer and humorist David Sedaris reads from his holiday story, The Santaland Diaries. Then coming up at 9 o'clock, Stephanie Elkins joins us with 3 hours of holiday music taken from our great collection here at WPR. That and more specials coming up today.
Support comes from Sylvan Learning of Kenosha, offering personalized tutoring from certified teachers that's designed to inspire. Convenient scheduling and affordable hourly rates. Explore the options. Search Sylvan Learning of Kenosha or call 262-694-6286.
Music schedule, including weekend and overnight offerings, visit WPR.org.
In sports, the Packers beat the Carolina Panthers 33-30 yesterday. I mentioned those holiday specials. They also include Christmas at Luther College, recorded live earlier this month at Luther College in Decorah, Iowa. The show features highlights from their annual program of Christmas music that produced and hosted by Ezra Wall, WPR's La Crosse regional manager. You can hear that at 2 this afternoon. And again, other specials coming up between 9 and 3. You can find the whole list at WPR.org/holidays. A mild day for this Christmas, highs in the 40s and 50s, scattered showers, some fog in some areas through this morning, and it could get windy too by the afternoon.
This is Morning Edition from NPR News. I'm Asma Khalid. If you're in the mood for a classic holiday tale of comfort and joy, well, that is not what you're about to hear. Once upon a time, author and humorist David Sedaris worked as a department store elf. And just like a stale candy cane, the job left an odd taste in his mouth. But lucky for us, Sedaris turned his experience into a collection of short stories called The Santaland Diaries. So here, once again, is a Morning Edition holiday tradition. David Sedaris as Crumpet the Elf.
I wear green velvet knickers, a forest green velvet smock, in a perky little hat decorated with spangles. This is my work uniform. I have spent the last several days sitting in a crowded, windowless Macy's classroom undergoing the first phases of elf training. You can be an entrance elf, a water cooler elf, a bridge elf, train elf, maze elf, island elf, magic window elf, usher elf, cash register elf, or exit elf. We were given a demonstration of various positions in action, acted out by returning elves who were so on stage and goofy that it made me a little sick to my stomach. I don't know that I could look anyone in the eye and exclaim, "Oh my goodness, I think I see Santa." Or, "Can you close your eyes and make a very special Christmas wish?" Everything these elves say seems to have an exclamation point on the end of it. It makes one's mouth hurt to speak with such forced merriment. It embarrasses me to hear people talk this way. I think I'll be a low-key sort of elf. 22,000 people came to see Santa today, and not all of them were well-behaved. Today I witnessed fistfights and vomiting in magnificent tantrums. The back hallway was jammed with people. There was a line for Santa and a line for the women's bathroom. And one woman, after asking me 1,000 questions already, asked, "Which is the line for the women's bathroom?" And I shouted that I thought it was the line with all the women in it. And she said, "I'm going to have you fired." I had 2 people say that to me today. "I'm going to have you fired." Go ahead, be my guest. I'm wearing a green velvet costume. It doesn't get any worse than this. Who do these people think they are? "I'm going to have you fired." And I want to lean over and say, "I'm going to have you killed." The overall cutest elf is a fella from Queens named Richie. His elf name is Snowball, and he tends to ham it up with the children, sometimes tumbling down the path to Santa's house. I generally gag when elves get that cute, but Snowball is hands down adorable. You want to put him in your pocket. Yesterday, Snowball and I worked as Santa elves, and I got excited when he started saying things like, "I'd follow you to Santa's house any day, Crumpet." It made me dizzy, his flirtation. By mid-afternoon, I was running into walls. By late afternoon, Snowball had cooled down. By the end of our shift, we were in the bathroom, changing our clothes, and all of a sudden, we were surrounded by five Santas and three other elves. All of them were guys that Snowball had been flirting with. Snowball just leads elves on. Elves and Santas. This morning, I worked as an exit elf, telling people in a loud voice, "This way out of Santa Land." A woman was standing at one of the cash registers, paying for her pictures while her son lay beneath her, kicking and heaving, having a tantrum. The woman said, "Riley, if you don't start behaving yourself, Santa's not going to bring you any of those toys you asked for." The child said, "He is too going to bring me toys, liar. He already told me." The woman grabbed my arm and said, "You there, elf. Tell Riley here that if he doesn't start behaving immediately, then Santa's going to change his mind and bring him coal for Christmas." I said that Santa changed his policy and no longer traffics in coal. Instead, if you're bad, he comes to your house and steals things. I told Riley that if he didn't behave himself, Santa was going to take away his TV and all his electrical appliances and leave him in the dark. The woman got a worried look on her face and said, "All right, that's enough." I said, "He's going to take your car and your furniture and all of your towels and blankets and leave you with nothing." The mother said, "No, that's enough. Really." This afternoon, I was stuck being photo elf for Santa Santa. Santa Santa has an elaborate little act for the children. He'll talk to them and give a hearty chuckle and ring his bells, and then he asks them to name their favorite Christmas carol. Santa then asks if they'll sing it for him. The children are shy and don't want to sing out loud, so Santa Santa says, "Oh, little elf, help young Brenda here sing that favorite carol of hers." Late in the afternoon, a child said she didn't know what her favorite Christmas carol was. Santa Santa suggested "Away in a Manger." The girl agreed to it, but didn't want to sing because she didn't know the words. Santa Santa said, "Oh, little elf, come sing Away in the Manger for us." It didn't seem fair that I should have to solo, so I sang it the way Billie Holiday might have sang if she'd put out a Christmas album. "Away in a manger, no crib for a bed. The little Lord Jesus laid down his sweet head." Santa Santa did not allow me to finish. This evening I was sent to be a photo elf. Once a child starts crying, it's all over. The parents had planned to send these pictures as cards or store them away until the child is grown and can lie, claiming to remember the experience. Tonight I saw a woman slap and shake her crying child. She yelled, "Rachel, get on that man's lap and smile or I'll give you something to cry about." Then she sat Rachel on Santa's lap and I took the picture, which supposedly means, on paper, that everything is exactly the way it's supposed to be, that everything is snowy and wonderful. It's not about the child or Santa or Christmas or anything, but the parents' idea of a world they cannot make work for them.
Writer and humorist David Sedaris reading from his Santa Land Diaries. It's Morning Edition from NPR News. I'm Asma Khalid.
And I'm Peter Bryant in for Alex Crow. Thanks for joining us today. Stephanie Elkins is up next with 3 hours of holiday music favorites, and we have specials for you until 3 o'clock today on WPR.
Support for WPR comes from the Century House, featuring Herman Miller furniture and stressless Norwegian recliners, on University Avenue in Madison, furnishing homes and offices since 1948. CenturyHouseInc.com.
Support for WGTD comes from the Kenosha County Aging and Disability Resource Center. Benefit specialists help navigate Social Security, Medicare, Medicaid, and other benefit programs. Their services are free and confidential. Call 262-605-6646.
Listen.
You're listening to WGTD HD, Kenosha.